Hey everyone, welcome to a deep dive you're not going to want to miss into Mandate for Leadership. And just so you know, right off the bat, we're not talking about some little policy pamphlet here. This is a blueprint, a massive one, absolutely packed with ideas for, well, let's just say, a potential conservative president taking office in 2025.
Yeah, and this thing doesn't mess around. It's ambitious, it's provocative, and get this, it touches on basically everything. I mean, you name it. Defense, education, even family structure, they go there.
It's a fascinating read because it really does lay out a vision for how different America could be, one shaped by the author's view, right? That the nation is, in their words, in decline, and that to fix it, you need a fundamental shift in where the power is.
Yeah, they're not talking about just tweaking a few policies here and there. Oh no, this is total overhaul top to bottom.
So where do they even begin with something this big?
All right, picture this. 1981. Ronald Reagan just moved into the Oval Office, right? And he gets this hefty report. It's the original mandate for leadership. So now, fast forward to today, we've got this updated version for 2025. Same urgent call to action, just, you know, a modern spin.
A blast from the past with a 2025 twist. I like it. So, what's the common thread, though? What's the core belief that's driving both of these versions of the mandate?
At its heart, the authors of both the 81 and this new 25 report, they believe America is in a state of decline. They say ruling elites, and that's a direct quote, by the way, not me putting words in their mouths. They say these elites have taken the power away from everyday people, and, well, they've got to get it back.
Okay, so it's that classic conservative argument, right? Too much government, not enough individual liberty, return power to the states, that whole thing. But does it go deeper than that, or is that pretty much it?
Oh, it definitely goes deeper. They go way beyond the talking points we're all used to. They're framing this as, like, an existential struggle, a battle for, as they put it, the soul of America. And they're very clear about what they think the biggest threat to that soul is.
What's that?
The decline of the traditional family. Straight up.
See, that's interesting to me because you don't always see those kinds of social issues taking center stage in these big economic policy reports. Usually it's all tax cuts, deregulation, that kind of thing.
Exactly. But mandates for leadership, they dive headfirst into family policy, welfare, education, the whole nine yards. And they look at it all through this lens of, we got to make the family strong again. That's the foundation of everything. They even say this decline. It's not just a social issue. It affects the economy, national security, you name it.
So we've got the overarching narrative, America is in decline, got to return power to the people. But how does that actually translate into, you know, governing? What do they actually want to do?
That's where things get really interesting, because they have this very specific target in their sights. They call it the administrative state. Essentially, we're talking about the federal bureaucracy, but way more ominous sounding, right?
Ah, the bureaucracy. The eternal thorn in the side of every administration since, well, forever. But this report, it sounds like they have a particular vendetta.
Bordering on obsession, honestly. But here's the thing. It's crucial to understanding their whole strategy. Because for them, it all boils down to this. Who really holds the power in America? Is it the elected officials that, you know, we vote for and who are supposed to answer to us? Or is it this army of unelected career bureaucrats, the ones actually running the agencies day in and day out, making decisions that affect all of us?
It's about control, right? Who's actually calling the shots on everything from regulations to how the government spends our money?
Exactly.
Okay, so you're saying that for them, it's not enough to just have the right people in office. It's about having control over the machinery of government itself. But can you give me, like, a real-world example? Because for a lot of people, this whole administrative state thing, it's kind of this big, abstract, scary term, right?
Totally. So, there's this anecdote in the report that really jumped out at me, because it shows exactly what they're talking about.
Yeah.
So, after that massive data breach at the Office of Personnel Management, you know, OPM back in 2015, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Defense Intelligence Enterprise, they call it the DIE, they basically took over.
Took over what?
Responsibility for, like, most civilian security clearances.
Wait, so you're telling me the Pentagon is out there vetting people who work at, like, the Department of Education or something?
Exactly. And the report, they argue this is a perfect example of the bureaucracy just, like, grabbing power that's not theirs. And look, it's not about whether the DIE is doing a good job or a bad job. For them, it's a matter of principle. Who should have that power in the first place.
Right.
And they say it should be those accountable to voters, meaning elected officials, not career bureaucrats, no matter how experienced they might be.
So what's the solution here? Are they saying fire everyone in Washington and just start from scratch? Because I'm not sure even a conservative president could pull that off.
Right. That's a bit extreme, even for this report.
Huh?
But they do lay out this three-pronged approach that's, well, it's pretty strategic. First, appoint loyalists. But not just at the top. We're talking every level of government. Really embed people with the right worldview.
Okay, that's classic. Right. But what's the second prong? You can't just have people in place. They have to actually be able to do something.
Exactly. And that's the second point. Those appointees, you got to give them real power to actually shape policy, even if it means ruffling some feathers with the old guard, the career bureaucrat.
Give me an example of that.
They argue, for example, that the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, like, they should be the ones really calling the shots on spending. Like, they're the president's enforcers, making sure his agenda is actually reflected in the budget, even if Congress doesn't love it.
Interesting. And what's the third part of this plan?
This one's simple, but not easy. Cut, cut, cut. They want to ruthlessly eliminate anything they see as wasteful, duplicative, you know, anything not absolutely essential to their core mission. And that goes for every agency, every program.
Streamline, make it efficient, make sure it's all geared towards achieving their specific goals. So basically, a complete top-down transformation.
Exactly. They even talk about how the White House Office of Legislative Affairs, you know, the OLA, they shouldn't just be rounding up votes once a bill is written. They need to be involved way earlier in shaping policy, making sure it aligns with the president's vision from the very beginning.
See, now that's interesting because it kind of flips the script on how things usually work, doesn't it?
Totally. And it shows you how serious they are about wielding power differently. This isn't just about winning elections. It's about fundamentally changing how Washington works from the inside out.
Mandate for leadership. It's not for the faint of heart, that's for sure. But okay, so we've talked about their big picture philosophy, this whole idea of America in decline and their desire to, as they put it, dismantle the administrative state. But this report, it goes beyond these, you know, overarching themes, right? It actually gets into the weeds, the nitty-gritty on how they view specific departments and what they would actually do if they were in charge.
Oh, absolutely. Mandate for Leadership is surprisingly detailed. It lays out recommendations for pretty much every area of government, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it gets even more interesting, I think. Because you see how these abstract ideas, you know, limited government, individual liberty, how those would actually play out in the real world.
Yeah, because anyone can talk a big game about shrinking government, but this report, they actually name names, right? They go agency by agency, and they're not afraid to say, get rid of this, cut something for that.
Exactly. And it's not just about being provocative, although I'm sure that's part of it. It's about showing they've really thought this through, that they have a plan for everything.
All right, so since we don't have time to cover everything in this deep dive, we're going to focus on a few key departments that you specifically were interested in. So where should we start? Maybe with the Department of Defense. It's a pretty hot topic these days with, you know, everything going on globally. What's their take on keeping America safe in a world that feels increasingly dangerous?
So they definitely prioritize modernizing the military. That's a given. But their big focus is on American manufacturing. They want to see, like, a resurgence in making military equipment here in the U.S.
Okay. That tracks. Bringing those jobs back home, reducing reliance on foreign supply chains. It seems like made in America, for them, it's more than just a slogan.
Oh, absolutely. They tie it directly to national security, you know. They argue that depending on these global supply chains, especially from, like, potential adversaries, it's making us incredibly vulnerable.
And they explicitly say that.
Oh, yeah. They even point to how the Air Force is struggling to meet its own goals for how many, like, operational squadrons they need to have. And they blame it partly on, you know, relying on these foreign suppliers, parts getting held up, the whole thing.
It's timely, too, you know, given all the supply chain issues we've seen lately, even just in, like, everyday life. I think it's made people realize that these disruptions are not just some abstract economic concept. It can have a real impact.
Totally. And it feeds into this larger goal they have of just, like, bolstering American industry, period. Lessening our dependence on other countries, especially when it comes to something as critical as, you know, defense.
So, a strong military, but equipped with American-made technology, American-made resources. That's a powerful image for sure. Okay, now, concerning about national security, what about the Department of Homeland Security? Immigration, border security, these always hot-button issues. I'm guessing this report doesn't shy away from any of that.
You guessed it. Mandate for Leadership. They call for some pretty major changes at Homeland Security, especially when it comes to ICE and border enforcement. We're talking a much stricter approach to illegal immigration.
Which, again, tracks with what we've heard from a lot of conservative lawmakers lately, right? What specifically are they proposing?
So they want ICE to detain way more individuals who are suspected of being in the country illegally. Like, they want them to utilize all available detention space, and they want to make it much, much harder for those individuals to be granted parole. Essentially, it's about making it a lot riskier to even try to enter the country illegally.
Okay, so a much more hardline stance on enforcement, but what about legal immigration? Do they even address that at all?
They do. They actually call for streamlining the process for, like, skilled workers, investors, people they see as beneficial. But there's always a but, right?
Always a but.
It's always with an eye on national security and what they see as beneficial for the economy. For example, they want to refocus the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, you know, USCIS, on its original purpose, which they say is to really vet applicants.
Not just rubber stamp things.
Exactly. They even talk about making changes at FEMA, pushing for more responsibility to be at the state and local level, especially when it comes to disaster preparedness. They say the federal government shouldn't always be the first responder.
So it's about streamlining where they can, but always with that emphasis on security and on giving more power back to the states whenever possible.
Exactly. That theme, pushing back against what they see as federal overreach, is really consistent throughout the report, and it pops up again big time when we look at the recommendations for the Department of Justice.
Which, let's be honest, this is where things tend to get, you know, controversial. Because people have such strong, deeply held beliefs about things like criminal justice reform, and it's tough to find common ground. What's their approach?
Mandate for Leadership, they call for a much more, I guess you could say, aggressive approach to prosecuting crimes committed by people who are in the country illegally. They also want to really prioritize what they call immigration offenses, you know, visa overstays, things like that. And they argue for way stronger collaboration between the DOJ, Homeland Security, and the State Department.
So when it comes to immigration, they're not messing around. It seems like they want to really come down hard on anything they see as a violation of immigration law.
Right. And again, it's a clear departure from how things have been done, especially recently. They're basically saying the current system is broken and we need a more coordinated, strict approach, period.
They seem particularly concerned about what they see as just a lack of enforcement of the laws that are already on the books.
Totally. They argue that upholding the rule of law means, you know, enforcing the law, even when it's difficult, even when it's unpopular. And this commitment to, well, their interpretation of the law, it extends to their stance on equity initiatives as well, which is interesting.
Oh, that's a topic that always sparks a lot of debate, for sure. How does Mandate for Leadership handle that whole issue?
They don't mince words. They flat out say that a lot of equity initiatives are inherently discriminatory because they undermine the idea of equality under the law.
By giving preferential treatment to certain groups, they would say?
Exactly. They see it as reverse discrimination, plain and simple.
So we've got a strong national defense strategy, a very hardline stance on immigration, a pushback against equity programs. What about the environment? Because I'm guessing a conservative blueprint probably doesn't exactly sing the praises of the EPA, right?
You know it. They want to see the Environmental Protection Agency significantly downsized. They argue it's grown way too big, way too powerful, and that its regulations are often, you know, unnecessarily burdensome. They stifle economic growth, that whole thing.
So less regulation, more freedom for businesses to operate without the government looking over their shoulder.
Basically. They believe that environmental protection should be more of a state issue. Let individual states decide what's best for their environment and their economy.
Okay, but what about climate change? You can't talk about the EPA without talking about climate change. It's such a defining issue for so many people, and it often feels like this dividing line between conservatives and liberals. What do they land on that?
So the report acknowledges that climate change is real. They're not, you know, full-on denying it.
Okay, so they're not climate change deniers, but they're not exactly sounding the alarm bells either.
Exactly. They're advocating for, let's say, a more measured approach.
Yeah.
One that takes into account, you know, the potential costs and benefits of all these different environmental policies. And they believe the EPA has just become way too focused on climate change at the expense of its other responsibilities.
A more cautious approach, trying to find a balance between environmental protection and economic growth.
Exactly. They want to see a more pragmatic approach to environmental policy in general. Yeah.
Makes sense. Now, I know we need to move on, but there's one more department I want to touch on because it's so central to, you know, the future of any nation. Education. It's an area where, you know, conservatives have really been pushing for some pretty significant reforms for a long time. What does this report have to say about it?
Education is huge for them. They lay out a pretty bold vision. I mean, the school choice is, like, priority number one. They firmly believe that parents should have the power to decide where your kids go to school, not the government.
So more charter schools, vouchers, that whole thing. Giving parents more options, more control.
Exactly. They want to see a huge expansion of charter schools and, well, basically anything that provides an alternative to the traditional public school system. They even recommend abolishing the Department of Education.
Whoa. Okay, that's a pretty big change. I mean, I know they're all about shrinking the federal government, but that's a big one. So what happens to all the Department of Education's responsibilities if it just disappears?
They say those functions, they should be either distributed to other agencies, like maybe Health and Human Services, or just given back to the states entirely. They argue that education is something that's just best handled at the local level, not by some massive federal bureaucracy.
It would be a huge shift in how we think about education in this country. And what about the curriculum itself? Any strong opinions on what kids should be learning these days?
They're big on what they call a return to the basics. You know, reading, writing, arithmetic, science, all that good stuff. They believe these fundamentals should be the priority. And they're very critical of what they see as an overemphasis on things like, you know, social-emotional learning or critical race theory in some schools.
So, a back-to-basics approach. More control for parents, less influence from the federal government, both in terms of how schools are run and what they're actually teaching. It's a pretty stark contrast to the direction things have been heading in recent years.
Definitely. And if even half of these ideas were ever fully implemented, it would be a radically different educational landscape in the U.S.
Yeah. So we've gone pretty deep on this, you know, this whole vision they lay out in Mandate for Leadership. We talked about their big picture ideas, right? Like how they want to shake up how the government actually works, then got into the specifics of how they'd approach things like defense, immigration, education. But this report, I mean, it's a beast. There's still more, isn't there?
Oh, we're just scratching the surface. Mandate for Leadership, they don't just stop at the, like, the big ticket items, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They get into the weeds on a whole bunch of other agencies, what they should be doing, how they should fit into this whole vision of a very different America, let's be honest.
Which is important, because as you've seen, the whole thing is about really changing the game, right? Not just making little tweaks here and there.
Yeah.
So what other areas do they really, like, target for, I guess you could say, reform?
Energy policy is a big one, like a really big one. They want to completely shift away from what they call green subsidies. Instead, they want an all-of-the-above energy strategy, but one that they think actually makes sense, you know.
Okay, so less emphasis on wind and solar power, more of a focus on things like oil, gas, maybe even nuclear. Is that what they're getting at?
That's it. They basically say that this big push for renewables, it's been driven by, like, ideology, not by what actually makes economic sense.
Yeah.
And they're a little worried about whether renewables can really deliver, you know, keep the lights on, especially as demand for energy just keeps going up and up.
So energy independence, affordability, making sure we don't have blackouts every other week, those are their priorities. And again, it all ties back to that concern about supply chains, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not being overly reliant on other countries, especially when it comes to something as vital as energy.
Exactly. They see it all as connected. And this desire to streamline, to cut out what they see as just unnecessary government meddling, it comes up again when they talk about, like, how we approve new energy projects.
Because that whole process, it can take years, right? Just to get all the permits and everything you need.
Please tell me about it. And this report, they want to totally overhaul the whole permitting process because they say it's just gotten completely bogged down in bureaucracy, which makes it way too expensive, way too time-consuming to develop any new energy sources here in the U.S., no matter what those sources are.
Cut through the red tape, unleash American energy production. Yeah, it's definitely a recurring theme for them, for sure. Okay, so that's energy, but what about all those other agencies, the ones that aren't directly under the president's control? I'm thinking, like, the Federal Reserve, the FCC, they have a ton of influence on the economy, on technology, but it's not always clear how a president can actually get them to do what he wants.
That's the tricky part. And it actually highlights, I think, a kind of, like, a contention within conservative thinking in general.
How so?
Well, they say they want limited government, right? But they also want to be sure that these really powerful agencies that, you know, technically are kind of independent, well, they want to make sure they're not doing things that undermine the overall agenda.
Right, so it's a balancing act. Because they can't just issue orders like they might with, like, you know, the Department of Defense or something. So what's their strategy for these more independent entities?
They really go after what they see as mission creep. You know, agencies that they think have gotten way too big for their britches, so to speak,
yeah.
and started doing things that were never part of their original mandate. They use the term overreach a lot, too.
Okay, give me an example. Which agencies do they have in the crosshairs?
Well, the Federal Reserve is a big one. They want to see a much less activist Fed, one that basically just focuses on keeping prices stable and doesn't try to, you know, micromanage the entire economy.
So no more bailing out big banks, no more of that quantitative easing stuff. Because that's been the playbook for, like, the past 20 years, hasn't it?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But this report, they're saying it's time to go back to basics. They argue the Fed has just drifted way too far from what it was originally supposed to do.
Yes.
And that all these interventions, they often do more harm than good. They even suggest, and this is where it gets kind of wild.
What is it?
They suggest maybe it's time to at least explore some alternatives to our current system, like, you know, fiat currencies. They don't love it.
Wow. They really are trying to think outside the box, huh? Like, how do you even begin to change something as fundamental as that? It's not like you can just snap your fingers and poof, new system.
Right. But it shows you how much they want to reshape, like, the very foundations of how the U.S. government operates.
Yeah.
And this applies to how they think about technology, too. Like, they want to rein in the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission.
The FCC? What do they want to do with the FCC?
Less power, basically. They want to limit their ability to, you know, regulate internet providers. And forget about any attempts at net neutrality rules. They are not fans.
So a much more hands-off approach. Let the market sort it out. Don't impose a bunch of government mandates, that kind of thing.
Exactly. They see the internet as this engine of innovation and free speech, and they think that too much regulation will just stifle that, you know, kill the goose that laid the golden egg, so to speak.
There's that theme again. Freedom, empowering individuals and businesses to operate without, as they see it, unnecessary government interference. Which, I mean, it makes sense, right? It's kind of a bedrock principle for a lot of conservatives.
For sure. And it all comes back to their views on the economy, because they dedicate a big chunk of mandate for leadership to small businesses. They argue that small businesses, they're really the engine of economic growth.
Yeah.
And they need the freedom to thrive.
Which, again, makes sense. Small businesses, they create jobs, they drive innovation. So what's their plan for helping them out? Lower taxes, I'm guessing.
That's part of it, yeah. But they also want to streamline a lot of the Small Business Administration's programs. They say there's too much bureaucracy, it's too hard for small businesses to navigate the system and get access to loans and, you know, the support they need.
Less red tape, easier access to capital. Basically, level the playing field so small businesses can compete and succeed based on, you know, their own merits.
Exactly. It all ties back to that core belief in a dynamic, free market economy,
yeah.
You know? One where the government isn't picking winners and losers. It's just creating an environment where anyone with a good idea and a strong work ethic has the opportunity to succeed, whether they're starting a small business or, you know, developing a new energy source.
It's an ambitious vision, for sure, and we've only just scratched the surface of all the ideas packed into Mandate for Leadership. But as we wrap up this deep dive, I have to ask how much of it is actually achievable. I mean, even with a strong mandate from voters, a president faces a lot of obstacles, right? You've got Congress, the courts, even just public opinion.
That's the million-dollar question to have. It's one thing to lay out a vision. It's another thing entirely to actually make it a reality. I think Mandate for Leadership, it's more than just a policy blueprint, you know. It's a statement. Like, here are our core beliefs. Here's what we stand for. Here's what we think America should be. And whether you agree with them or not, it's got some really important questions. Like, how much change is really possible? What are we willing to give up to get there? And what kind of America are we actually trying to build for the future?
Big questions. And I think this report, it does a really good job of, you know, laying out one possible path forward, even if it's not necessarily a path everyone's going to want to take.
Totally. And that's kind of the beauty of a deep dive like
mm-hmm.
this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It challenges us.
Yeah.
It makes us think critically, consider different perspectives, even if they make us uncomfortable sometimes.
Absolutely. And on that note, we'll leave you all to ponder all of this and come to your own conclusions. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Mandate for Leadership. We'll be back soon with another fascinating look at the ideas shaping our world.